You're listening to the Hog Sports Network Daily Podcast. Now, here's your host, Matt Jones.
Hey, happy Thursday to you. We appreciate you being here with us. Arkansas basketball defeated Troy last night at Bud Walton Arena, 65-49. We'll break it all down today. The Razorbacks moving to 2-1 on the season. Also, we will end the show today with something a little bit different. Going back to the Hogs Illustrated Sports Club, earlier today we had Lindy Lindsay, Jason Allen, and Marvin Kasten there to talk about their experiences of Arkansas, Texas. Kind of a fun listen that we'll have for you here a little bit later in the show. But first, the Razorbacks beat the Trojans 65-49 last night, and it was not a pretty game.
No, not at all. Very ugly, I would say. I mean, especially going into that first media timeout, it was bleak, gross, disgusting, vile, despicable. just not good basketball. I made my thoughts on that, I guess, pretty, maybe too clear on Twitter, I guess. But, it was a very bad start. The second half was obviously much better. They hit shots in the second half, which they haven't really been doing much of all season so far. But that first half was diabolical. Just not good.
It was sleepy basketball. That's what I would call it.
I would call it like train wreck basketball.
Yeah. To each their own. We'll put it that way.
I mean, Troy had more turnovers in the game, not just in the first half, in the game than made baskets.
The older I get, the harder it is for me to stay awake for too long. And so I was wanting to doze off during that game last night. It was
That's also fair.
It was like the basketball equivalent of a sleep gummy for a good while during that game. Some stats to know. Zvonimir Ivicic, 19 points. Adu Thero, 19 points for the Razorbacks. They tied for the game high in points. Boogie Fland had 12 points. For Ivicic, he also added, what did he have, 2 rebounds. He had 3 block shots. He was kind of 3 steals, I think. He was all over the floor. Thero had 7 rebounds. And Fland had 7 assists. So those were the 3 players who really brought it for the Razorbacks. Trevin Brazil got injured early in the game, and that was unfortunate because he was off to a great start for Arkansas. Only played 9 minutes, but he ended with 4 points, 5 rebounds, 2 blocks, and 2 steals. And they had to have Ivicic stand up or step up late in this game, Anthony, because they didn't have any other big men out there. They didn't have Brazil. They didn't have Jonas Adu available, except for a few minutes last night as he continues to come back from an injury. If they don't have Ivicic play the game that he plays, I don't know that they beat Troy.
Yeah, probably not. Calipari did kind of mention post-game that he still is kind of looking for him to have more of an inside presence you look back at that Baylor game, he did kind of get pushed around a little bit by Norchad Omir in there. But, against Lipscomb and against Troy, I thought he looked good in both of those games. Especially in the second half against Troy. I mean, I think he went into halftime with 3 points on 1 of 2 shooting and then just kind of came alive in the second half, played 16 of the 20 minutes in the second half. So you could tell, obviously, that they tried to play a lot through him and Boogie Fland and Adu Thero, obviously. Those were the big three on the night. But, he was big down the stretch, not just on offense, on defense, too, you mentioned. I think he had 4 second half blocks, something like that. Let me check the box real quick. Four second half blocks and then 2 steals as well in the second half. So he was getting it done on both sides of the ball. So that was big, and he played the most out of anybody in the second half too. So
Ivicic was great in the
Actually, Adu Thero played 20 the full second half.
Ivicic after halftime, 16 points and 5 of 6 from 3 in the second half. He was kind of like instant offense for Arkansas because they got it to him, and then all of a sudden, when he started making shots, it seemed like the lid came off for everybody.
You look at just the difference between the two halves. I mean, Arkansas went into halftime shooting, I think it was 29% from the field. That's not even just three, but 29% from the field in general. Second half shot 63% from the field and 66% from 3, which is kind of unbelievable when you've watched the other games they've played, just with how they just haven't been able to hit shots from the perimeter. 8 of 12 from the three-point line in the second half. Obviously, most of that was Zvonimir Ivicic, but also Boogie Flam was getting involved. Duthiero hit a three. I think John L. Davis had one, too, even though John L. Davis didn't have, you know, his best shooting night. I mean, those are the things that you kind of want to happen, especially when you're able to play through a guy, you know, preferably in the middle, in Zvonimir Ivicic, who can kind of play a little bit like a point forward. Maybe not to the extent of like a Robbie Avila or somebody like that, would you would say, but you know, you can play through him in that spot, and he's versatile enough to where he can step out, hit threes, or can look for a pass to another guy. And yeah,
we've got some clips to play for you from John Calipari. As always, very animated after the game was Calipari. And this is what he had to say about Arkansas's poor shooting start to the game.
At halftime, this may be the worst shooting team I've ever seen. Some of you, right? And the hard thing, like all kind of teams in the country right now, not making threes. Making three, making four. Like we have been. But when you're coaching, you challenge them because you want to put pressure on them. Because when they get in the game, there's going to be pressure on them. But for this team, the way we drive the ball, if it's contested at all, you should never shoot it. We're not a great three-point shooting team. If it's contested at all, you should drive the ball. If it's not contested inside out, or you're 7'2", and they can't get to it. What I did find out today, which I kind of knew, I hate that, but Z's probably got to take 5-6 threes a game.
John Calipari on the win last night and the way the Razorbacks shot the ball. It's interesting because, you know, after the Kansas game, exhibition, and Kansas was shorthanded and they didn't play a zone, but he said he thought that this was going to be a good three-point shooting team, and now you hear him say, We're not a good three-point shooting team. And the stats, at least through three games, would back that up for the most part. I don't have what the updated stats are, but I could do the math in my head here real quick. It'd be that they've made 19 of 62 three-pointers through three games. And so I think the verdict probably is still a little bit out on whether or not they're a good three-point shooting team. They did not have two good games to start the year, but, I mean, you shoot 10 of 23. That's a number you can live with.
Absolutely, yeah. And it is kind of funny. You heard him mention, needing Zvonimir Ivicic to take 5-6 threes a game. That's quite the contrast from July when he said, "I'm not going to have him shooting any threes." I guess you kind of take what you get and kind of change approaches throughout the season. But it's still early, right? I mean, you could still, you know, find that three-point shooting touch. Somebody like John L. Davis could get hot and really start getting going like he did at Florida Atlantic all those years. And obviously, I think Boogie Fland is another guy who can get it going from the three-point line too. But, yeah, I mean,
Carter Knox,
I mean, he's shown that he can hit a three. Didn't have his best shooting night last night. But, I mean, you do see it. I don't know. Like, the potential's there. It's just not in practice yet. And I asked him about, you know, maybe some adjustments that they maybe made at halftime to get better looks. And he just kind of said, we're a really good driving team. So that's what we tried to do.
If Nelly Davis gets over this wrist injury, and there's no reason to think he won't, he's going to be Arkansas's best 3-point shooter. I mean, he was like a 40% 3-point shooter at FAU. But to me, I don't know that there's a prettier stroke on the team than Ivicic, which is crazy to think about. It's 7-2.
Yeah. And it kind of, it's interesting because it kind of goes into like this whole discussion about modern basketball and, you know, having guys who are, you know, 7 foot who can, you know, dribble, pass, and shoot. Like this kind of Wembanyamification of basketball, if you will. Not saying that Zvonimir Ivicic is Victor Wembanyama, far from that, but. Just having that kind of skill set. It's a big deal. I remember I read a story that Seth Davis had written for The Athletic a couple years ago, focused on Grant Nelson while he was still at North Dakota State, and just how, you know, NBA scouts were looking at him with a higher or a brighter light than they were looking at Zach Edey, just because he is, He had more ability to shoot from range and everything like that. Obviously, I don't know that that's still the case because Zach Edey's had a, an okay start to his NBA career, and Grant Nelson is obviously at Alabama and playing well and everything like that. But it does kind of go to show that, having guys with size who can shoot and pass and do all that sort of things or those sort of things is a big deal.
So we've got another clip for you from Calipari about Ivicic last night. So he didn't start the game. Trevin Brazil got the start in his place because Ivicic he didn't play well against Baylor. Calipari on the postgame show last night said he really wanted to see how Ivicic would respond. This is what he had to say in his postgame press conference.
Maybe finding out or already knowing that you needed Big Z to shoot more. Was that a message maybe before the game, like, hey, let it fly a little bit, be more aggressive from three?
No, my message to him is you better get in there and rebound and block shots and fight. You can't do what you did at Baylor where the guy wedged you out, grabbed the ball, and laid it in. It was one bucket game. And we're making those kind of – those are just effort plays. I'm fighting him. He's fighting me. He's not moving me. I'll foul him. How about that? I'll foul him. Make him shoot free throws. You're not just grabbing a ball and laying it in. Fight. So he has the skill – and he's a confident kid. I told him after, I whispered in his ear, I'm proud of you. Because for 2 days, I just said, you're not starting. You don't deserve it. TB does. So you come off the bench now. And he responded. That means that he's going to be fine.
I feel like part of coaching is just all about finding the right buttons to push with each player. And at least for last night, they found the right buttons to push for Ivicic. Even after he started poorly. I mean, he had a stretch there early in the game where defensively he rotates and he kind of chases a ball carrier to the baseline and then – or a ball handler to the baseline. And, he leaves the rim open for an easy shot. Mm-hmm. And there was a – and this is all like maybe within a minute and a half of each other. He misses a dunk on a lob pass. Wasn't the greatest pass, but he's 7'2". You need to be able to finish that dunk. And then there's an out-of-bounds play. He gets beat over the top on an out-of-bounds play. And Calipari didn't look too pleased with him at that point. But to his credit, Navisic's credit, that it's not always easy to kind of pull yourself together when things aren't going your way. And he was able to do that within the framework of the same game and ended up having a great game for them and really responding to what the coaching staff seems to have been talking to him about.
Yeah, absolutely. And I mean, like you mentioned, obviously he didn't start. But he's kind of been in that role for a long time, right? Whenever he's played with his brother, who's Thomas Love, who's now at Illinois, so we'll see him on Thanksgiving. So that'll be a fun matchup. But Thomas Love was always starting whenever they were on the same team, so he was always kind of comfortable in that role of coming off the bench and providing that kind of off the bench spark. Why you don't try to find a way to start those two guys, I don't know. I'm not a coach of a Croatian basketball team, so I don't know. Or any basketball team for that matter. But and I don't think you would want me to be a coach either because I would be bad at it. But he did very well in that role of coming off the bench and really kind of providing a spark and really taking over the game like we mentioned in the second half, especially from the 3-point line.
One thing that I think gets overlooked because of it's just human nature to focus on offense in games. But I was talking with Manny Watkins after the game. And, Manny made a point. He said that sometimes or oftentimes a team is so far ahead defensively at this time of year than it is offensively. And we're seeing that with Arkansas. So where I'm going with this is that defensively, I feel like maybe that gets overlooked what they're doing right now. Because of some of the offensive struggles that they were having. But, Anthony, through three games, this has got the look, and we'll see if it can continue, but it's got the look of an elite defensive team.
Yeah, I mean, right now, and obviously it's still early, so you don't want to push agendas too much, I guess. But, right now, through three games, they're the number 7 rated defense on KenPom. I don't remember that they've yet to concede or allow 70 points in a game.
Well, they're averaging 60 points a game against, and they're averaging 17 turnovers forced.
I was looking at the wrong number. They have allowed 70 points in a game. I was there.
72 against Baylor. 60 a game. Last night was the first time that they have not or that a team has failed to score 50 on them in 2 years since one of Musselman's teams did that against Fordham. 17 turnovers a game. They forced 22 turnovers last night. It was the most turnovers they forced in a game in 3 years. They're doing a really good job of deflecting passes, getting in the passing lanes, blocking shots, and using those types of plays for runouts to help their offense and maybe help spark the offense. We even saw during a little quick stretch last night where Troy had gotten back within 3 points, and Thero makes a shot. I think they get a steal on the other end. Thero gets a run out, and then they get a block shot on the other end, and Thero comes down and hits Fland for a corner three. Mm. And from that point, the game really isn't even in question. They're doing a lot of good things for their offense with their defensive play.
Yeah, absolutely. And that's still without Jonas Adu being at full health. I mean, he's an elite-level rim protector, and they're still getting all these block shots even without him. I mean, you're looking at Zvonimir Ivicic, who's picking up a lot of, that at-the-rim defense, even though you still want to see him be a little bit more physical inside. Trevin Brazil has gotten some blocks. Even guys like DJ Wagner have gotten blocks. So, I mean, they're playing very well on the defensive end. Obviously, they cause a lot of steals. Boogie Fland is an outstanding on-ball defender, as is DJ Wagner. And then, you're disrupting passing lanes and all of that. So early signs are very promising on the defensive side of the ball, yes.
You can read all of our coverage from last night's game at wholehogsports.com. Get the latest breaking news on all Razorback sports at our website. We think it's the most in-depth source for all Arkansas sports analysis. Anthony's got a couple of analytical pieces from the game last night on the website right now. Latest on recruiting from Richard Davenport. Hey, it's early signing period. Richard's got some new material on the site as well. Unique stories on all your favorite teams. Subscribe today at wholehogsports.com. Anthony, thanks for being here. When we come back, we are going to have a panel discussion with Lindy Lindsay, Jason Allen, and Marvin Kasten, former Razorbacks who have played or been part of teams that played in the Arkansas-Texas series up at our Hogs Illustrated Sports Club. We'll have that for you in just a moment, but first a word from our sponsors.
Want to enjoy your life again? Burning, numbness, and general pain in your feet and legs might be keeping you from your daily activities. Neuropathy treatment can be effective to restoring your life. Come see what we can do at Enhanced Healthcare Wellness Institute in Uptown Rogers. We can treat your neuropathy pain and get you back in the game of life. Enhanced Healthcare Wellness Institute is located at 5102 West Pauline Whitaker Parkway in Uptown Rogers.
At Kendall King, we're proud of over four decades of design. We're continuing the legacy of great creative design by combining our brands of Kendall King, Soapbox, and ShopCart. Together, these brands represent a new focus in marketing design with individual attention to specific areas. Through our design expertise supported by a team of talented professionals, we showcase our best. We are Kendall King, we are Soapbox, we are ShopCart, we are Design.
Hey, welcome back. We want to tell you about our friends at Enhanced Healthcare Wellness Institute. They are your source for holistic wellness and your healthy lifestyle changes. Located in Uptown Rogers, the staff at Enhanced Healthcare will target your specific health plan for wellness, from neuropathy treatment, primary care, weight loss, and so much more. You can count on the experts at Enhanced Healthcare Wellness Institute in Rogers. Earlier today at the Hogs Illustrated Sports Club, we had a panel discussion with former Razorbacks Marvin Kasten, Lindy Lindsay, and Jason Allen about their time playing for the Razorbacks against Texas. We're going to play that panel discussion for you now in two parts, and here is our first part of our discussion at the Hogs Illustrated Sports Club.
This was the old form of getting your NIL money. This is how that generation got NIL. So you got to be careful with these envelopes. Lindy was over there looking like. This was NIL back in the day. We didn't get all that cash to end. All right.
You two have got your work cut out for you, trying to match his personality. Marvin, you dry yet?
I'm sorry?
Saw you at the football game Friday night.
Oh, my God.
He sat out in the rain.
Just getting over that.
Yeah, he's sitting out in the rain. I mean, and you were layered up, too.
I was, and, watching my – we got a 10th grader, and we was over there watching him freezing, cold, and wet. So I've had a rough week fighting that off, but it's all good.
That was about as rainy of a game as I've ever seen.
It
was wild. So what we'll do is you two will share a microphone. You and I will share a microphone, Jason. Let's start, Marvin, we'll just start with you. Guys, just tell everybody when you played, what you played, what your experiences were.
I played from 95 to 99, fullback. Well, I didn't start off as a fullback. I came here as an outside edge rusher, defensive end guy, but we changed coordinators, two or three different times in between there. with Danny Ford, who was the head coach who recruited me here. And then in 98, Coach Nutt came. So my junior, senior year, coach that was Coach Nutt, his staff, first 2 years.
I played 87 to 91, and I was with 3 years with Coach Hatfield and two with Jack Crow. And when I got there, nobody knew. I didn't know what position I was going to play. I was either outside linebacker or a tight end. And I told – and so Roger Henshaw, who's the outside linebacker coach, and Coach Turner was the tight end coach, they I basically told Coach Turner, I can catch a ball. And he said, well, let's put you at tight end. So that's kind of how that happened.
All right. I'm 90 through 94, so a little bit in between these guys. Came redshirted in 90 and then finished up in 94. Played quarterback all those years. So when I got here, Quinn Grovey was a senior. Basically, was the splash of that year because our defense didn't know how to play, I don't think. But I do have a funny story. So I finished in 94, and I was actually 1 hour short by a mistake, so I had to come back and take a two-hour elective in 95 to graduate. And I got married, and that was weird. You know, I had to come back on campus. But I was trying to show my kids where I was on the senior walk. They put me in 96. And so my kids are like, yeah, it took you – took you 6 years, but that's not true.
That's what you call a victory lap. Marvin, you came here. Tell everybody about the story, how you got here, because Booger McFarland plays a role in your story, right?
No, I was before Booger. Booger was after me.
Before him, okay, yeah. After. But you guys were.
But I think I know where you're going. Where yeah. We had a chance to sign Booger, okay. Right? Is that the version of the story?
I think that's where I'm going. Yeah, you tell me where I'm going.
Yeah, we had a version. We had an opportunity to sign Booger.
Okay.
LSU had just hired Jerry DiNardo as a football coach. And I grew up in North Louisiana, up around the Monroe area. And they had this big-time halfback, Jameis Spencer, ended up signing with Notre Dame. But anyway, DiNardo flies into Monroe and goes sees Spencer. And he doesn't drive 45 miles to see Booger. Well, you know, Booger's ego got in the way, and he thought, well, just the heck with LSU. I'll go to Tennessee. And so we told the coaches. Coach Hill got on it, and he was coming to Arkansas. So Coach Hill takes Danny Ford to the home visit. Now, you guys are familiar with Danny Ford. Those who are familiar, this will track. Danny Ford goes to the guy's house, and Booger's mother is as old school as you get, right? Discipline, all of that stuff. So she pulled out the fine china, everything, and let him sit in her living room where plastic's still on the sofas, so you get where I'm going. And he commences to put his cowboy boots on her coffee table. Yeah. Now, Booger's mom used to curse a lot. And she said, Marvin, it took everything in me not to cuss that man out. I won't say what she said, on my table. And anybody that got no respect for someone's house, my son can't play for them. And that's the reason we didn't get Booger McFarland. But y'all that know Danny, that you could just see him sitting there putting on boots on there. And yeah. Mama, that didn't fly well. So Boogie ended up, and LSU flew back in and smoothed it over. And, of course, the rest is history. Goes to LSU. But
so he would have played in that Cotton Bowl had he come to Arkansas, right?
Yeah, that would have been, yeah. Yeah, because he would have had – that would have been his third year, but his draft year.
Well, the defense was good enough that day. What was it, like 8 sacks? Texas ran for minus 27 yards.
We knocked out 3 quarterbacks.
Yeah.
That game was crazy. Now, I didn't play in that game. Remember the Tennessee game that we beat Tennessee a few weeks before that? I blew my knee out.
Mm-hmm.
That's why I'm limping around here now. So I didn't actually play in that game, but that was our senior year. And the night before, or the week of maybe, Coach Brawls came – Coach Nuthead, Coach Brawls come – talk to the team about the importance of the UA-Texas rivalry because we were only familiar with the SEC, our team. None of us played in the old Southwest Conference and didn't play Texas. So this was, I think that was the first game we played Texas since mm-hmm. y'all beat them. And Coach Brawls came in with all that energy and passion. And, I mean, we knew by the time he was done talking the importance of this game in beating Texas. I mean, he laid it on thick with that Georgia atmosphere and the importance of winning this game. I mean, we don't lose to Texas, and so you know. But I just remember, you know, that was the cold red defense, Kenoy Kennedy and those guys, and they started begging during the week. Keith Burns was the defense coordinator. Coach, can we run it? Right, just practice, man. Coach, can we run it? We want to run it. Just go to practice. They wanted to at first pre. Bear Jet Black Exchange was the name of the all-out blitz that they ran, for you guys that followed it. they start begging Keith Burns that week of the game, can we run that the first play of the game? And I think they knocked one of their quarterbacks out. They end up knocking three quarterbacks out. I think they finished the game with their fourth team quarterback, if memory serves correct. They had a negative 27 yards rushing. Mm-hmm. I mean, just DJ Cooper just was a maniac that day up front. They couldn't block him and Melvin Bradley and those guys. They were fun to watch. Canoe and them, they knocked, and Cedric Cobbs ran like a deer that day. Mm-hmm. It was unreal to watch that kid run. He really got after it that day. So,
was there Major Applewhite was their starting quarterback that day. Now he's the head coach at South Alabama. Chris Sims, who's on NBC now, he came in after Applewhite got knocked out. Ended up having a pretty good career there, but wasn't very good that day. You two, for the 91 game, just to kind of set a backdrop for what was happening in Little Rock in October of 1991, I think over about a nine-day period, Bill Clinton announced his candidacy for president on the old State House steps. And then the day before you guys played Texas, which was a big deal anyway, the Democrat and the Gazette merged. The newspaper war ended in Little Rock. And then you've got your game against Texas, which at that time, Lindy, I guess you never knew if you were going to play Texas again, right?
Well, at that time, I mean, I think we really knew that the conference, you know, that Arkansas was going to the SEC. Now, that year, you know, we end up going, we lose to Miami right out of the gate. And then we get on a roll, and we're winning because this guy right here was at quarterback. And he always talked about being united and together. And he played really, really good that year. And, hey, and I mean, you got carried off the field after the Texas game, didn't you? Mm-hmm. Yeah. So
shoulder ride, like they put it right.
You got carried off the field.
Yeah. Only time in my life.
Yeah. Yeah. But he was great quarterback and leader as well.
I appreciate you saying that. There's a lot of things going on. The weather was beautiful that day, and there was a few things. I don't know if you'll bring this up, but I'll just kind of give you my memory. I grew up in Oklahoma, so I grew up learning to hate Texas, but I just grew up an Oklahoma Sooner fan. That's how I didn't know anything different. Obviously, I converted. You know, there's no issue. But I was going to OU Texas games in the 80s as a kid. Go back and look at those games. There were some very – there were always ranked games and, you know, impacted the national championship. So, as a kid, I was just – it was ingrained in me, you know, hook 'em horns and just the mystique of Texas and the program. And so, it was – I was – you know, Texas week brought out the best in me for sure. I was, you know, looking at the scouting report, looking at some of these guys, the height of Jeb over there, all their – Shane Drenette, Lance Gunn. I mean – back in 1991, their strong safety was like 6'4", 215. So Texas was – they had all the athletes, right? They had beaten Oklahoma 2 weeks before they played us. Oklahoma's number six. Texas didn't have a great, great year, but they had all those athletes. And here's the other thing. Every place we went in 91, they knew we were the ones defecting the conference. They wanted to beat us so bad because they – made it, oh, you're not good enough for us, you know, or you're too good for our conference. You're going to the SEC. So every game was they were gunning for us. But it was a day that I think Jack Crow, our coach, it was trying to get a signature win for Coach Crow. And for those that don't remember, when we won, and by the way, we needed some help to win that day. Our defense played great, and their kicker was horrible, both of them. They missed two field goals and an extra point. God shined down on us. We did our part. But we celebrated. We went in the locker room. And what happened? We went back out on the field, and nobody had left. Wow. They were still calling the Hogs. Wow.
Great story. And then didn't the Razorback Band, didn't they play All My Exes Live in Texas? Like throughout the year? That's what I thought I'd heard that story. You know, so at that time there was some thought that Texas would go to the SEC, right? I mean, Dan Ferriter told me one time that he was getting calls from the Texas chancellor saying, go on, make that move to the SEC. And he said, and he later found out he thinks that, you know, they wanted Arkansas to go first, and then there was some chance that maybe Texas, maybe A&M would join them. So they're in the SEC now, Lindy. We'll start with you. They look like they're SEC ready now, right? I mean, obviously they're going to be in the championship game potentially at the end of the year. But – how ready do you think they would have been for the SEC at that point in time?
You talking about
Texas?
Texas.
Yeah, had they made that move with Arkansas? Because Arkansas took their lumps. Would Texas have had to have taken their lumps, too?
And I think you can honestly say by looking at Oklahoma that you're going to take some lumps jumping to the SEC. So I would figure they would take their lumps, no doubt. One thing I want to follow up, when we won that game 14-13, which it's really ironic to think that the two scores, and it just hit me that the two scores that the teams I were on that beat Texas are the same exact two scores that Dad's were when he played, which is kind of cool. And to piggyback that, I mean, me and John David, our whole life was, we were kind of trained to be Razorbacks. Mm-hmm. That was our deal. And from hearing the stories of Dad's days and them winning the national title to the next year and 22 straight and almost winning it again. And, I mean, as a six-year-old kid being out there watching Earl Campbell run up and down that field, you know, there's just a lot. There's a lot in there with all that. And, you know, 79, Dad, we go to Little Rock playing Texas down there, and Texas is number two. And, Dad, we're in the stands, and he goes, there ain't nothing like playing Texas when they're ranked up there. Mm. Ain't nothing like beating Texas. Well, we beat Texas that day in Little Rock, Lou Holtz, 1979. Al Michaels calls a game. Wow. Then in 81, 42-11, Keith Jackson's calling the game. Mm-hmm. And I'm 13, John David's 11, and we got sideline passes. Mm-hmm. So we're down there on the sidelines. And back then, it wasn't like stay between the 25 and the goal line. We could mingle right in amongst everybody. So we're right in the middle of all that action. So, you know, we've had just a, you know, an eternal life with this rivalry. So
we've got a great picture of Tom Jones in the 81 game. He had thrown the ball so much, he's icing his elbow in the water cooler that the rest of the team is drinking out of. So,
hey, we hope you're enjoying our conversation with Jason Allen, Lindy Lindsay, and Marvin Kasten at the Hogs Illustrated Sports Club. We'll have the rest of the conversation when we come back, but first a word from our sponsors.
Want to enjoy your life again? Burning, numbness, and general pain in your feet and legs might be keeping you from your daily activities. Neuropathy treatment can be effective to restoring your life. Come see what we can do at Enhanced Healthcare Wellness Institute in Uptown Rogers. We can treat your neuropathy pain and get you back in the game of life. Enhanced Healthcare Wellness Institute is located at 5102 West Pauline Whitaker Parkway in Uptown Rogers.
At Kendall King, we're proud of over four decades of design. We're continuing the legacy of great creative design by combining our brands of Kendall King, Soapbox, and ShopCart. Together, these brands represent a new focus in marketing design with individual attention to specific areas. Through our design expertise supported by a team of talented professionals, we showcase our best. We are Kendall King, we are Soapbox, we are ShopCart, we are design.
It's changed a little bit since then. Hey, Lindy, I want to ask you, too. You mentioned your dad. Jim Lindsay played for the Razorbacks on their 64 national championship team. They beat Texas 14-13 in Austin that year. Texas missed a two-point conversion right at the end of the game, and that allowed Arkansas to win. I've heard Jerry Jones talk about this, and he said when they flew into Fayetteville that night, they said that it changed everybody's life forever who was on that team. Share with us some, maybe if you would, about your dad's recollections of that game and how important that was to them.
Well, you know, he always said that they were the same people, but they weren't the same players. Mm-hmm. You know, they were different after that win. And, you know, then they closed out, I think, the last five opponents maybe, they shut them out. So he just said it was the greatest days of his life. I know that.
Guys, just – I'll start with you, too, because, Marvin, it was different when you played Texas. You weren't in the same conference with them. Jason, we'll start with you. Just kind of take us through what the weeks were like leading up to Texas.
Well, for, you know, the weeks were, you know, we were trying to get back on a winning foot in 91 from 90, and we started to do that, right? So we had some confidence going into this week, and I think it was the sixth or seventh game of the year. We were undefeated in conference. We had come back and beaten TCU a couple weeks before that. We beat Houston. David Klingler, run and shoot, beat Houston in Fayetteville. So we went in with some confidence. But what I noticed, you know, being from Oklahoma, I knew this was this was the game, right? This was, but I hadn't been in Arkansas, really. I mean, it wasn't the same in 1990, my redshirt year. I didn't travel that game. It was down in Austin. But particularly this week, this practice, what I noticed was Coach Nutt, all the coaches, I mean, the body language, the inflection, the running between drills, I mean, everything was amped up. And so I was talking to my dad on the way up here, telling him about this, and he goes, you know, he goes, it just goes to show you, you roll the ball out there in the middle of the field, you tee it up, and it's who wants it more. And Texas definitely had the more talent, but it was Texas brought out the best. So we kind of played with a healthy fear of we got to be our best because this is mighty Texas. They had beaten Oklahoma. Jury's still out on which direction we're going to go. Jack Crow trying to get a win, you know, a big signature win. So that's really what was at stake. And I think the crowd staying in the stands and celebrating, and then we're going to the SEC, it was just one of those moments of we can do this, and we needed this win.
Hey, Marvin, I'll ask you this. I think Arkansas is 5-2 against Texas since leaving the South, or maybe that last game, the game you guys won that started a 5-2 stretch. How much do you think the competition that Arkansas saw, maybe versus what Texas was seeing during that time, played into that?
You mean back when we played in the
when you
in the
played,
LSC?
Or even you know, even the Texas Bowl, even what we saw a few years ago?
Oh, yeah. No, the talent level has changed, no question about it. I mean, just take a look what's happening in the state of Arkansas with our high schools and the facilities that these high schools are building, the weight rooms. The high schools are investing, and you're getting a lot of better talent here in Arkansas. And other states like Texas and Louisiana are just expounding on what they have from a talent pool. I remember talking to Fitz Hill, who was recruiting coordinator when I was being recruited. He said, we just extended the Arkansas state line to wrap in that I-20 corridor, which included East Texas, mm-hmm. North Louisiana, over into Mississippi, Meridian, Jackson, on around to Alabama. Mm-hmm. And that was what we recruited. I mean, you look at the talent they go with, that Danny Ford, you know, Danny Ford doesn't get a lot of credit for help setting the foundation for Arkansas being in the SEC from a talent standpoint because, you know, you look at it, according to him, the facilities weren't where they ready for the SEC. And when he got here to help his buddy Coach Kynes, the talent wasn't SEC ready back then. So when you look at those guys, that Joe Pate and Fitz Hill, Washburn, the kids they brought in here and recruited, man, we had some talent in here. To go get a Quentin Caver out of Alabama with two schools in the SEC, probably one of the greatest linebackers to ever play here. Lucas, one of the best receivers to ever play. I mean, those guys recruited talent. And the league it's changed. NIL has changed everything now. It really has. I mean, in terms of you just buying kids now. Mm-hmm. And you can almost like the NFL flip your look if you evaluate and pay the right guys the right money. You can be competitive very quickly than the old days. And, you know, so talent, it's a different deal. It's a different deal.
That said, I think NIL should be called P for P. It's play for play.
You're right.
Yeah.
Texas, speaking of Texas, hijacked NIL with pay for play when mm-hmm. they announced we're going to pay all of our linemen $50,000. Mm-hmm. Where they were the first school to find the loophole in NIL. And once they announced that we're going to give every lineman $50,000, it was game on. And the numbers it's out of control and it's crazy. But you're right. What Shedeur Sanders is doing, Livy Dunn and other places, those caliber athletes, that's real NIL. And that's mm-hmm. how it should work. What the rest of NIL isn't for everybody. Your whole roster shouldn't get NIL. That's pay for play. There's no question. If anybody tell you they're not, they're lying to you.
Yeah.
It's exactly pay for play.
Okay, so now we're on an NIL discussion, and I want to get back to Texas for a second. But Marvin ran the NIL program for Arkansas.
The collective.
One Arkansas. I have felt that with NIL, it's almost like a Major League Baseball deal. You're either a small market or you're a large market, and the large markets have the big advantages when it comes to NIL. How can a small state like Arkansas be expected to, and how are they going to be able to keep up with these schools like a Texas that, I mean, look at their population and look at their alumni base, and you compare that to Arkansas, there really is no comparison. How can you keep up with those type of teams?
Well, in this new, let's fast forward to August 25 when rev share kicks in. Mm-hmm. every school in the SEC is setting aside roughly $21.5 to $22 million for rev share. The only way that you avoid what you're talking about, to avoid what you're talking about, some entity has to step in and shut down the collectives, right? These collectives have got to shut down. Otherwise, Texas and those big market schools are going to have, they're going to outspend us. We're never going to outspend them. Mm-hmm. If you can have that, the money from your budget plus a collective raising another $10, $20 million, you're not going, it's just going to be a mess like it's been. But if somebody steps in, whether that's the league, I don't know how the leagues do it. I know they're working on some stuff to have some uniformity and some agreements where collectives go away. If that happens, then the playing field is equal. You have a more transparent system. Everybody knows what everybody's kind of spending, similar to what the pro markets see with salary caps. And you don't have the kids. This market is so inflated as we speak right now because there's no database. Arkansas can't look into a database and see what LSU is spending, what Alabama, et cetera, et cetera. And so the kids come to you and say, hey, I was just at Tennessee. That coach over there offered me $150. What's Arkansas going to offer me? And then he goes to Texas A&M and said, hey, I just left Tennessee and Arkansas. They offered me $150, $300. What you going to offer me? So the market's so inflated, and there's no way to prove who's doing what the truth is. And we don't know that all these schools are spending this money.
Mm-hmm.
We should be saying we're spending $20 million. How do you prove it?
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, that's the biggest flaw with this pay-for-play model, and hopefully they'll shut these collectives down, and then everybody kind of has a database so you can track this a lot better, bring the numbers down.
All right, let's talk about this week's game with the time that we've got left. Marvin, I'm going to start with you. We've got these efficiency ratings on our website.
You got what?
Efficiency ratings,
okay,
on our website.
Okay. Yep.
And I have been beating the drum for 4 or 5 weeks saying I think Ole Miss is the best team in the conference. And, I mean, it said they were going to beat Georgia last week, for instance, and they did. Texas is right there behind them. And we saw what Ole Miss did here 2 weeks ago. How can Arkansas have a different result this week, do you think?
Well, the team that beat Tennessee show up. I think if you look at Arkansas's losses, if I'm recalling the stats right, every game we've lost, we've averaged 3 turnovers. You ain't going to beat nobody with 3 turnovers. Football hadn't changed in 200 years. The team that can run the ball, stop the run, stop the other team from running it, and don't turn the ball over, 9 times out of 10 is going to win. So you got to be able to run the football. You got to be able to stop them from running it and don't have turnovers, and that'll increase Arkansas's chances of winning.
Well, I think we need to start better, right? I felt like we were flat against Ole Miss. I don't know what it is. So if they're not going to be their best on this game, I'm not sure that what they've got left. I do think they'll play. They've coming off a week off, so you got to think that they're healthy. You know, I was looking back at stats from our 91 game, and it wasn't great from stats, but we held the ball 30 minutes in that game. So I think that goes into running the football, and then don't give up the big play. I mean, somebody set a they were setting records a couple weeks ago. We cannot let the big play beat us, because I think that gets in your psyche for the rest of the game.
It's Lewis Campbell saying, don't chase the big numbers. We've
That's
been
right.
chasing the big numbers
That's
a lot
right.
last
mm-hmm. Well, I mean, we beat Tennessee. If we can beat Tennessee, we can beat Texas. And if you really – I don't want to give them bulletin board material, but if you really look at who they want, who they beat, it hasn't been just like – I mean, you know, Michigan was good when they played them or was ranked high.
Mm-hmm.
But, I mean, Michigan's 5-5 now. I mean, Georgia beat them. But, I mean, really, who have they played?
They haven't beaten a team ranked right now.
That's right.
Yeah, so, I mean –
Vanderbilt's probably their best win.
They could be ripe to beat. You know, I think we could beat them.
All right, so here, one more for all of you. We'll start with you, Lindy. If Sam Pittman invites you into the locker room Saturday before the game, and you are to give a pep talk to the team about what the Texas game means, what are you telling them?
Well, I'm probably going to go. There's a lot of fans out here that have grown up watching this rivalry. And I want you to go out there right now. I want you to give every single thing, everything you got. Knock that ball loose. Be ready to recover it. Quarter running backs, take care of the ball. Go punch them in the mouth. Punch them in the mouth. Drive their ass out of there. And let's go win this game. That's probably what I would say. If I had a little bit more time to think about it, I might have been a little better. But that's what I would say. And I'm sorry if I said that bad word. All the high school kids here.
You're on on video. They recorded it.
You know, what I would say is similar to that, but I would really build on that one Razorback. I mean, this is a unique state. I can remember leaving Oklahoma, coming to Arkansas, and it felt different to a point where I married an Arkansas girl. I haven't left. Arkansas is a special place, and you have to tap into that. And I think Sam Pittman did that really well in a time to reset the program. I think that was his mantra, and it rallied people together. But there's no better time to do it. I mean, Texas is Texas. They're the you know, the hook'em horns, all the talent and the money, the size of the state. I mean, we're just little Arkansas. You have to tap into that, which leads to what this part of the speech. It's not the size, right? It's got to initiate that emotion that I've got to be better than this guy. I got to want it more. So,
I remember a high school coach used to tell us, say, a sorry dog won't fight in his own backyard. So that's the first place we'll start. They're coming in our backyard, okay? And last time we were out in our backyard, we didn't put up a really good fight. You got the best fan base in the world, and they're all going to be here because they know the importance of this rivalry. You didn't show them a good outing the last time you was there. I mean, we got our butts kicked. Here's the time we go out here tonight and we buckle up. We put our gear on tight and we line up and take that field like Razorbacks take the field. And we're going to fight them for 60 minutes. Regardless of what the scoreboard says, when it's all over, they're going to know they were in a fight. And if we take care of the ball and we do the things we're supposed to do and play as a team, we're going to love the outcome. But I want to see some passion. Show up like you give a crap and go out there and fight. Give these fans what they come to see. You go out there and lay it on the line. That's what you do all that running in the summer for, lifting them weights, running in the cold. You go lay it on the line right now. You give it to them. You show up with some Razorback passion and pride and give them the fight of their life for 60 minutes.
Let's go.
Yeah. That's what you want to do with
it. Does Sam have your number?
Yeah, Sam's got my number. And then we're going to sing the fight song when we win.
We're going to send him that clip. You're going to be you're going to be in the locker room Saturday before the game, Marvin.
Hey, I just got to raise money, man. I got to go try to figure out. I got enough on my plate trying to raise money, man. Hey, but I'll do whatever the team calls me to do. I'm a team player. There's no question about that.
You can pass the plate to all those players getting their NIL checks. Marvin Kasten, Lindy Lindsay, Jason Allen. Guys, thank you for being here.
Thank y'all. Appreciate you.
Thank you for being with us today. Hope you enjoyed our discussion with Lindy Lindsay, Jason Allen, and Marvin Kasten up at the Hogs Illustrated Sports Club. If you're interested in joining us at our next meeting, it will be next Thursday, November 21st. Kyle May, the executive director of Arkansas Edge, will be there to talk to us about the Edge program, the NIL collective for the Razorbacks. That'll be November 21st, noon, at Home 2 Suites in Springdale. You can reserve your seat now at OzarksTix.com. That's OzarksTix.com. For Kyle May on November 21st at the Hogs Illustrated Sports Club. Again, our thanks to Lindy, Marvin, and Jason for their time talking to us today about their experience playing for the Razorbacks, their experience in the Arkansas-Texas series. We'll break down the game tomorrow on our podcast. Ethan Westerman will join me here in studio. We'll also give our weekend predictions. Until then, hope we'll see you at our website, wholehogsports.com. We'll be back with another podcast tomorrow. See you then. Have a great day, everyone.